Welcome to the deep dive. Ever felt like you're just caught in a current? Maybe an emotion or a thought just pulls you along and you don't know how to steer.
Yeah. Or maybe acting impulsively and then thinking, oh, why did I do that?
Exactly. Well, today we're exploring a really powerful way to understand those inner currents and, importantly, how to navigate them with, you know, intention. Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. We're diving into mindfulness of feeling tones, which is a crucial practice from the RAFT to Freedom program.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be clear, when we say RAFT, we mean RAFT, but pronounced just like the word raft.
Right, and it stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, Train.
Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, Train.
Yeah.
And the program itself is really designed to guide you away from suffering, away from those harmful, compulsive, or reactive behaviors, towards freedom, towards well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. What's really key here, I think, is that this deep dive aims to equip you with a kind of sensitive barometer for your inner world.
A barometer. I like that.
It helps you steer your own raft, you know, with purpose, with compassion. It's really about creating that essential space for choice in how you respond, instead of just being swept along.
So whether you're maybe looking to get up to speed quickly on this, or find some moments of clarity, or just, you know, handle life's challenges with a bit more skill, this deep dive should offer some really practical insights. Okay, let's get right to the heart of it then. Our focus today is on what the RAFT program calls feeling tones. You might also hear the term Vedana.
Mm-hmm, Vedana.
It sounds subtle, but wow, it seems profoundly impactful.
It really is. And it's important to clarify what Vedana is and maybe what it isn't.
Okay.
So we're not talking about the full-blown complex emotions like anger or deep joy, mm-hmm. or even just raw physical sensations like warmth or pressure.
Right.
Instead, Vedana is more like the bare immediate tone or flavor of any experience. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Or is it just sort of neutral?
That first quick hit.
Exactly. It's the mind's first, like, instant readout. It arises the moment there's contact, mm-hmm. through any sense, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, even thinking. But crucially, it's before all the stories, the judgments, the big emotions really get going.
Okay. That makes sense. And this isn't a new concept, is it? I mean, Gautama the Buddha himself taught about this.
Oh, absolutely. It's fundamental to his teachings. His instruction was actually remarkably simple, but profound.
Yeah.
He basically said, you know, when a practitioner is feeling a pleasant feeling, they understand, I am feeling a pleasant feeling. Same for unpleasant. Same for neutral. Just noticing.
Just knowing what's actually present.
Yes. And what's really insightful, I find, is his distinction between bodily feeling tones and mental feeling tones.
Ah, okay. Why is that distinction so useful?
Well, think about it. You might have a physical ache that's an unpleasant bodily feeling tone. But if you can meet that directly without adding a layer of, say, resentment or worry, which would be an unpleasant mental feeling tone, mm-hmm. you suffer much less.
Ah, I see. It stops that second layer of suffering from kicking in. Like the ache is just an ache until I start thinking, oh, this is ruining my day. Why me?
Precisely. It allows for that vital separation. You're not piling mental distress onto physical discomfort.
That makes a huge difference. Okay, so bringing it back to the RAFT metaphor.
Yeah.
How do these feeling tones fit in? How are they like the currents around our raft?
Well, in the RAFT program, we see feeling tones like those really subtle shifts in the water's current, or maybe the first hints of changing weather that you feel on the raft.
Okay.
If you learn to feel those subtle movements, maybe the water lapping against the hull in a slightly different way, you develop that sensitive barometer we talked about. You can read the immediate conditions.
So a pleasant feeling might be like a nice breeze tempting you to just drift off course.
Exactly. Or maybe some slightly choppy water. An unpleasant tone might immediately trigger fear or aversion, making you want to paddle frantically away without thinking.
Got it. So the awareness lets you read the conditions accurately rather than just reacting blindly based on that first pleasant or unpleasant hit.
Yes. It's about informed navigation.
This really underlines why paying attention to these often quite subtle tones is so important. So let's get into the why. Why is this awareness so critical for abandoning those patterns of escape or self-sabotage?
Okay, yeah, this is where it gets really crucial. Feeling tone, Vedana, acts as a pivot point in what Gautama described as dependent origination.
Dependent origination, the chain of suffering.
That's the one. It's the causal chain that often keeps us stuck. So contact through the senses or mind leads immediately to feeling tone, Vedana. And here's the key link. Vedana then typically leads, often automatically, unconsciously, to craving, Tanta.
Ate. That's the thirsting, right? The wanting.
It's that deep thirsting, yes.
Yeah.
Or grasping for more of what feels pleasant, or desperately trying to get away from what feels unpleasant. And from craving comes clinging, and from clinging, well, comes suffering.
But the insight here is?
The insight is that by becoming mindful, right at the point of the feeling tone, before the craving really digs in, we create a tiny window, a space to interrupt that chain reaction.
Ah, okay, so you catch it early.
You catch it early.
You know, that idea of automatic reactions just amplifying pain, it really makes me think of the Two Arrows teaching. Is that relevant here? Does it help illustrate this?
Oh, very much so. The Two Arrows teaching is a fantastic image for this. The first arrow, Gotama said, is the unavoidable pain in life.
Like stubbing your toe or getting sick, an unpleasant feeling tone.
Exactly. It's just part of the human condition.
Yeah.
But the second arrow, that's the one we shoot ourselves with.
Meaning
our added reactivity. Things like resentment. Why did this happen to me? Self-pity, maybe fantasizing about how things should be different. That second arrow multiplies the suffering.
And mindfulness of feeling tone.
Trains us to feel that first arrow, the unpleasant feeling tone, cleanly, just as it is, without automatically firing that second arrow of reactivity. It breaks the momentum of those habitual suffering-creating reactions.
So you just feel the sting of the first arrow, but you don't add all the extra drama and pain.
You learn not to add it. And by bringing that mindful awareness right to the feeling tone itself, we insert a conscious pause.
A pause.
Yeah. And in that pause, the whole dynamic shifts. Instead of vedana automatically leading to craving, tankhya, it can lead to wisdom, panya.
Wisdom. How so?
The wisdom that understands, this is just a feeling. It's unpleasant, yes, but it's temporary. I don't need to react to it in the old way. That understanding itself changes everything. Feeling tone stop being just a cause of getting caught. And they become a means for liberation.
Wow. So it's not just about coping better. It's actually transforming the feeling from a trigger for suffering into a signal for wisdom. That feels huge.
It is huge.
It's like, as you said, making that small steering correction early on, right? Before the big currents of craving and aversion really grab the raft and pull you way off course.
Exactly that. You navigate skillfully before the strong winds pick up, before the dangerous currents really start running. You catch the subtle shifts first.
Okay, we've talked about what feeling tones are and why paying attention to them is so fundamentally important. So now the really practical part, how do we actually do this? How do we practice this healing mindfulness, especially when things feel intense, when the currents are strong?
Right, the how to. Well, the RAFT program suggests a kind of two-stage approach, particularly useful when you're facing intense urges or really painful emotions when it feels like a storm hitting the raft.
Okay, two stages. What's stage one?
Stage one is what we call first aid for stormy seas, surviving the peak of the urge. When an urge or emotion feels totally overwhelming, the absolute priority is just to stay on the raft. Don't act in harmful ways.
Right. Survival mode first. Observation might be too much then.
Exactly. Direct, nuanced observation probably isn't accessible right then.
Yeah.
So the focus shifts to creating just a little bit of space using tools often found in modern therapies too.
Like what?
Well, you could engage in healthy, absorbing activities, things that really grab your attention, like listening to loud music, doing some vigorous exercise, maybe tackling a complex puzzle, anything that fully engages your mind differently.
Okay, distraction in a healthy way.
Or shifting attention outward by contributing, doing a small, helpful act for someone else. Sending a quick supportive text, making a cup of tea for someone, it gets you out of your own head for a moment.
That makes sense. What else?
Using intense but non-harmful physical sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Things like holding an ice cube tightly, stepping into a quick cold shower, biting into a lemon. The intensity can kind of short-circuit the urge's momentum.
A physical pattern interrupt.
Mm-hmm. And then there's gentle self-soothing, engaging the five senses kindly. Maybe lighting a scented candle, listening to calming music, wrapping yourself in a soft blanket. Just bringing some comfort to the system.
So stage one is about immediate coping, just getting through the peak without making things worse.
Exactly. Creating a brief pause, surviving the storm's height. Then, as that initial peak starts to subside, even just a little, we can move into stage two.
Which is?
Stage two. Reading the currents, mindful observation, and urge surfing. This is where the deeper practice of healing mindfulness really comes in. The storm might still be rumbling, but you're not about to capsize.
Okay. And urge surfing?
Urge surfing, yeah. It's about observing the remaining energy of the urge or the feeling as it moves through your body and mind, but without getting swept away by it. You're learning to ride the wave.
How do you start that?
Usually you find a steady anchor first. The breath is common. Just feeling the rise and fall helps calm the nervous system. Ground yourself.
Okay, anchor first, then.
Then you start to name the tone, not the tail. You lightly, gently note the immediate feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, as it arises.
Mm.
Just the label, like unpleasant or pleasant, letting that be enough without getting caught up in the story about the feeling.
So less, I hate this anxiety, and more just unpleasant, unpleasant feeling present.
Precisely. Then you can gently scan the body, maybe systematically moving your attention through different areas, just noticing any physical sensations, whether they feel gross or subtle.
Just noticing what's there.
Yes. And maybe investigate the sensation a little curiously. Note its characteristics. Is it warm, cool, vibrating, still? Does it have clear edges or feel diffuse? But without judgment, without creating a big narrative around it.
Right. And then connecting it back to the tone.
Yes. Gently acknowledge the feeling tone associated with that sensation. Pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Just a simple mental note, non-judgmentally.
It sounds like you can get quite detailed.
You can. The program even suggests trying a 3-pass scan. First, sweep your awareness through the body, looking specifically for unpleasant sensations, just acknowledging them. Then sweep again for pleasant ones, allowing yourself to notice them without clinging. And a third time for neutral sensations, discovering the stability that might be there too.
Interesting. 3 passes.
And remembering that distinction we talked about differentiating body and mind, maybe noting bodily unpleasantness for an ache or mental unpleasantness for a wave of unease, it helps untangle things.
Reducing that confusion.
Exactly. Yeah. And a core part is to observe impermanence, just holding the sensation, the feeling tone, in awareness and seeing how it naturally changes, shifts, maybe intensifies, then fades, like watching a wave rise and fall. It's not solid.
Seeing it's not permanent.
Mm-hmm. And if urges surge again during this process, there's a helpful acronym, MA.
O-M-R-A.
Yeah. Mindful awareness response appropriately. Pause. Ask yourself, what's the tone now? Take a few steady breaths, maybe with a little befriending phrase like, it's okay, and then consciously choose one kind next step away from harmful action.
Mindful awareness responds appropriately. M-A-R-A. I like that. And if it all feels too much,
then you gently return to the anchor, always back to the breath, or maybe the feeling of your feet on the floor, a safe place to rest your attention until you feel steady enough to observe again.
Wow. Okay. That really does sound like a complete toolkit. It covers the immediate crisis with the first aid and then the deeper navigation with the mindful observation and urge surfing.
It is. And it's designed to build that sense of self-efficacy, that confidence that you can navigate these inner states.
But I guess someone might ask, if I'm really, truly overwhelmed by an urge, doesn't trying to observe it just feel impossible? Like telling someone in a hurricane to notice the raindrops?
That's a really fair and important question. And that's precisely why stage one, the first aid, is so crucial.
Right.
It acknowledges that sometimes direct observation isn't the first step. The first step might just be survival, using those more active coping strategies to create even a tiny bit of space, a moment's pause.
So the first aid makes the mindful observation possible later.
Exactly. It creates the conditions where stage two becomes accessible. It's not about forcing observation when you're completely flooded. It's a staged approach. And ultimately, it really is about learning to befriend these feelings, not constantly battling them. That's where the freedom lies.
Befriending them, not fighting them, that changes the whole dynamic. This toolkit does sound genuinely transformative for steering away from those old harmful patterns. And it's compelling how this approach seems to bridge ancient wisdom with, well, modern understanding.
What's the backup here? What does science or psychology say about this focus on feeling tones?
Oh, the connections are fascinating and really supportive. From a neuroscience angle, we know that many harmful compulsive patterns involve, let's simplify it as a hyperreactive reward circuit deep in the brain. Think the limbic system, the amygdala firing off danger signals or intense cravings. This is often called bottom-up processing.
The urge taking over.
Right. And often the top-down control network, mainly in the prefrontal cortex, which helps us regulate impulses and make considered choices, can get weakened or bypassed in those moments.
Okay. So how does mindfulness of feeling tones help? It directly targets this by tuning into interoception, sensing your internal bodily state, which activates brain areas like the insula. You strengthen the connections between that prefrontal cortex control center and the more reactive amygdala. It literally helps create that pause neurologically, allowing the thinking brain to come back online and regulate the impulse instead of being hijacked.
So it rebuilds that communication pathway.
It strengthens it. And interestingly, it also seems to help restore the brain's natural reward system. By learning to notice and even gently savor subtle, pleasant-feeling tones from everyday life, the warmth of the sun, a nice taste, you enhance the brain's ability to appreciate healthy, natural rewards. This makes the pull of unhealthy, harmful, compulsive behaviors less powerful over time.
That makes a lot of sense. What about from a psychology perspective?
Well, mindfulness of feeling tones is basically a core skill for emotional regulation and distress tolerance, key areas in many therapeutic approaches. So many patterns of escape and self-sabotage are fundamentally attempts to avoid uncomfortable internal experiences, unpleasant feeling tones.
Trying to numb out or distract.
Exactly. This practice offers a completely different strategy. Acceptance and observation rather than avoidance. It aligns beautifully with therapies like acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT, particularly the ideas of acceptance and cognitive diffusion. Learning to see thoughts and feelings as just passing events, not absolute truths you must act on.
Like seeing the wave, not being the wave.
Precisely. And it's a cornerstone of dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, especially their distress tolerance skills, including that urge surfing technique we talked about. Learning to ride the wave of the urge until it passes naturally.
So it fits well with established therapies.
Very well. And, you know, the ancient Buddhist archetype of the hungry ghost, the pratinga.
The creature with a huge belly but a tiny throat, always starving.
That's the one. It's such a powerful metaphor for the futility of trying to find lasting satisfaction by constantly feeding cravings, which is often at the heart of the harmful patterns this practice addresses.
A really potent image, and philosophically.
Yeah.
Beyond the Buddhist roots.
Well, the Buddhist roots are primary, of course. The practice is deeply embedded in understanding impermanence, or anicca. When you consistently observe any feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, you see directly that's constantly changing. Mm. It arises, shifts, fades.
Nothing stays the same.
Right. And seeing that directly, viscerally, dismantles the illusion that any feeling state is solid or permanent. That naturally weakens the urge to desperately cling to pleasant feelings or violently resist unpleasant ones.
Because you know they'll change anyway.
Exactly. And it also ties into not-self, or anatta. When you shift from thinking, this is my pain, this is my craving, to simply observing, ah, there's an unpleasant feeling present, or craving is present, you reduce that ego identification.
It takes the me out of it a bit.
It reduces the self-criticism, the shame, the personalization of it all. And, you know, you can even find echoes in Western philosophy, like Stoicism. The Stoics trained themselves to observe their initial impressions, which you could see as related to feeling tones, without immediately assenting to them or reacting, creating a similar space for a wise response.
Fascinating connections across the board. Wow. This deep dive has been incredibly insightful. It really brings together the ancient, the modern, the practical. It's just so clear that mindfulness of feeling tones is such a powerful anchor, isn't it? A key tool on that journey towards liberation.
It really is.
And I think that line from the RFT program really sums it up. Remember to remember that we are not our feelings. We are the one who can observe them.
Beautifully put. And every single time a feeling, pleasant or unpleasant, is noticed, and that conscious choice is made not to be automatically driven by it, your inner anchor gets stronger. Your capacity grows.
Yeah.
It really is about befriending your feelings, learning their language, and through that, forging a path to lasting freedom, steering your raft with real purpose and compassion.
Well, for those listening who want to really dive deeper into this, the entire 67-chapter RFT to Freedom workbook, it's written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, and they've made it completely freely available online, which is amazing. You can find it at raft2freedom.org. That's raft2freedom.org.
Fantastic resource.
Definitely. So as you go about your day after listening to this, maybe just consider this question. How does simply observing a feeling tone actually alter your relationship to it? Do you notice any shift, even a subtle one, from this is my feeling towards, ah, a feeling is present?
A great question to carry. And maybe also remember that piece of wisdom from the program. If things go wrong, don't go with them.